Welcome back to another episode of the Jewish Moves Podcast. This week's episode is with Rabbi Daniel Z. Feldman. He's a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, the Rav of Or Sadia, the author of many svarim on various topics, a popular speaker, and so much more. This episode was recorded at 2:30 in the morning in Morosh HaKol this past summer. I hope you enjoy. I guess we'll try to discuss things chronologically and then discuss some more things in the end, but I guess starting from the beginning, I've heard that Rebbe was a serious learner at a young age. Can Rebbe discuss how and when Rebbe got into learning and what that experience was like?
I would like to hope that is true. I don't know. I'm still kind of working on that. I mean, I thank God was given a lot of opportunities to learn from a young age and was surrounded by a lot of Torah for a lot of years. So I'm very grateful for that. So if there's any truth to that, it is because thank God I was really given a lot of resources and a lot of encouragement and surrounded by svarim and by enthusiasm and by opportunities. So very grateful for that.
Very nice. And I heard that at a young age already, Rebbe was very enamored by the achronim. I heard that Rebbe and KBY used to hide the achronim when Rav Blachman would walk by. What was it about Achronim particularly that drew Rebbe in? And today, is that still a connection that Rebbe cherishes?
I do very much appreciate seeing different perspectives on Torah and feeling a part of the long conversation that began at Har Sinai and feeling that there are many different voices that are part of that conversation and that having as broad an exposure as possible to the great giants of Torah who have had what to say on the sugyas and the topics that we exchange in the Beis Medrash is a special opportunity. And halavai, we had time to engage with all of what was written, but as much as possible, it's always wonderful to get more perspectives and to have more of the back and forth that goes all the way back to Har Sinai and is still going on now.
Well, very nice. And we're recording this episode in Morosh HaKol, and I know Rebbe spent a lot of time here growing up and still comes back. I've heard Rebbe's described Morosh HaKol as the happiest place on earth. Is there a story or a few memories that stick out to Rebbe as above the rest?
It's all just one fantastic memory. You know, I always say it's the happiest place on earth. It's true. I have to be chole kavod Eretz Yisrael, so leave that out of the equation. But definitely the happiest place in Chutz Laretz. What you're able to experience here in terms of the spirit of Torah and camaraderie and achdus and respect for others and just genuineness of spirit and of respect for each other and the friendliness and of just Torah Lishma, people who are just learning because they love learning and because it's true and because they are about truth and sincerity, and there's nothing phony about anyone here. It's really just an unbelievable thing. And to come back here, I'm not going to say how many years later, but to come back here and really feel and really find that so little has changed, and I mean that in the best of ways, is just a glorious thing.
Oh, it's very nice. And when Rebbe wasn't in Morosh HaKol in the summers, I think Rebbe spent time by a number of different Gedolim, Rav Schechter, Rav Golovitz Latzal from KBY, Rav Blachman and others. What was it that Rebbe took from some of those Rebbeim that Rebbe tries to continue living with to this day?
I had a good fortune to really be exposed to many wonderful Rebbeim who each have a lot to offer in different areas of life and in different areas of Torah, and each have their unique perspective. You know, the Rosh Yeshiva of Golovitz was known for a certain expertise in Medrash and also a certain way of presenting Kavanah Torah and his values, and that was very uplifting. Rav Blachman has a unique relationship with his students, and I'm privileged to continue that as an ongoing relationship from then until now. Just ran into him last week and we had a nice conversation, and it's always been a source of guidance in his ability to look at a sugya in a objective way, fearless way, and also to approach all of life with his definitely unique way of seeing things and his very this very down-to-earth perspective and real interest in his students is something that has been a great source of inspiration, something they deeply appreciate and have drawn upon for all of these years. And Rav Shechter Shlita, of course, you know, is tremendous. Not only his tremendous breadth in Kol Torah Kula and his mastery of Torah, but also the sense of achrayus that he feels for Klal Yisrael, the way he's carrying it all on his shoulders, and his also fearless ability to just say what he thinks and to have it all in front of him and to understand it in his own way, and to be able to explain that and to present that to so many Talmidim in such an effective way, and something that I've also been very appreciative of.
It's very nice. And when it comes to the different Rebbeim Rebbe's had, naming a son after Rav Goldwicht is always an obvious show of kavod and hakaras hatov. Sometimes the wines get a little bored. For example, on Purim Spiels, when Rebbe played Rav Shechter, and what Rav Shechter described as playing him better than himself. How does it work when developing a Purim Spiel? What's considered good shtick, and when did Rebbe have to sometimes hold back on certain jokes or comments?
There's no question you have to be careful with the Purim Spiel. I've actually given a number of shiurim about this, and you have to really have a little bit of siyat d'shmayu also, and you have to be very careful, and not everybody is an appropriate candidate, and not everybody is a appropriate performer, not to say that I'm necessarily any more qualified than anyone else, but you have to really be careful. Rav Shechter has always been a very gracious character as far as being to be portrayed. He's always been very happy to be portrayed in Purim Spiels, and that also makes it easier. So the fact that it's known that he is somebody who takes it in stride and who in fact looks for it and is anxious to be portrayed in a way that shows that the Talmidim are able to recognize that, is definitely makes it a little bit less intimidating, and it makes it a little bit safer also. But one certainly has to be very careful and has to have an appreciation for what might be a sensitive spot, what might be derogatory. And I think, without going into the whole shiur now, but one of the major themes of why the spiels work when they do, and as they hopefully have in our yeshiva and other contexts in which they work, is that they're meant to be an expression of love, and they're meant to be conveyed as chiba and to be affectionate, and hopefully that's what emerges, and there isn't any sense of disparagement or mockery. And if that's the way they are planned and executed, then hopefully that's the way they come out, and hopefully if everything else is in place, it should be safe. But when there are different kind of intentions, then it becomes a much more fraught
experience. Something for the listeners to keep in mind. On a similar topic of caring about others, I think Rebbe's been known to always have a focus on mitzvos b'adam l'chaveiro with the same intense longness as any other topic. What drew Rebbe to that topic in the first place, and has kept Rebbe there for all this time?
Well, I think you mentioned the lumdus. I think it is something that was just worth bringing to the attention of the world. It was why I wrote my first book, that I thought that it was something that maybe people weren't aware of, the fact that the halacha takes this area as seriously as every other area of halacha. And that means as far as the rigor with which it's approached, that means as far as the lumdus that is brought to it, and that means as far as the real estate and the literature. And just seeing that and appreciating the extent to which this is treated with such attention and such care in the halakhic literature should be very inspiring and should be driven to, it should drive one to really take this much more seriously. So I know personally I'm not any better at this in terms of practice than anyone else. You know, so they say that those who can't do teach. So I figure if I write about these things a lot, then maybe hopefully it will have the hashpah on me, and then maybe that will be productive. And that is something I'm still working on. So, but I do see how it potentially could start to have an impact. And this is an area where it's much harder in practice than other areas of Torah. There's so many challenges to being able to really effectively rise to the demands of Mitzvos Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. So it takes a lifetime of study, but I find it to be personally inspiring and something that I can try to work towards. And if I can share that with the world, then who knows, maybe all of us together will make some progress in this crucial area.
All right, hopefully everyone could join you in getting better.
Someday we'll work towards it.
Okay. Rebbe was an advisor for NCSY and had supposedly, I wasn't a wise man, but supposedly had a tremendous hashpa on the teenagers who Rebbe worked with, and a great influence. How can our shuls or communities inspire teenagers today in addition to what they're getting at their high school?
That's a good question. There's so much out there that competes for the attention of the teenagers or the adults, of all of us. And we all strive to try to find that which is meaningful and that which is relevant and that which is inspiring, and to recognize that that can come from a lot of different directions, a lot of different avenues. So we have to be open to non-conventional methods of education and look for opportunities that are not necessarily obvious, and also to look to speak to what is on people's minds. So that's also relevant to that issue of Beit Adam L'Chaveiro that you mentioned, and also any other aspect that is a part of what we encounter in contemporary life, and try to make sure that we're addressing that in our educational outlets and in our communal outlets. Mm-hmm. And to bring everyone into that discussion.
Interesting. And in addition to connecting not only with teens, but the whole Tzibor through Rebbe Shul or Sadia, Rebbe also has a shir and gives a lot of shirim in YU. How does Rebbe's work compare when dealing with giving speeches or shirim or Divrei Torah or one-on-one conversations with the Shul's community as opposed to with Talmidim in YU?
I'd like to see it all as one whole. This is all an integrated life and effort, and it's not necessarily that these are completely different spheres. The human beings are human beings, and people need to be spoken to wherever they're at, and that means whether they are Talmidim in Yeshiva or congregants in Shul, and sometimes they are the same people, and sometimes they're different, and sometimes the same people need to be reached in different ways, whether that means a Gemara Shir, whether that means a Musa Shmuz, whether that means a Drasha and Shul, whether that means a Parsha Shir, whether that means a one-on-one conversation, whether that means some combination of all of the above. But all of your life experiences inform each other. So what I can say is that I'm very grateful to be able to be doing all those things at once, and that I don't know if I, to whatever extent, not to say that I am effective, whatever extent I'm effective as a Rebbe or as a Shul Rabbi, I think I'm probably more effective in each because of the other. And that the experience with the students in Yeshiva helps to inform my experience of the community. And the experience of the community helps to inform the experience with the students. And just as everything helps you grow as a person and as a communicator and as an educator. So I'm very fortunate to have all these opportunities at once, and hope that it could bring them together in a way that benefits everybody who I interact with.
Wow, very nice. And when Rebbe's asked Shiloh's back by those two communities or one community, so Rebbe on the one hand, you know, everyone who's ever opened a Bina B'Sfarim has seen the pages of Askamos from Gedolei Hador of the past one or two generations, and those of Rebbe. Rebbe also graces the halls in YU with Rav Schechter of Willing and so many other poskim and Rosh Yeshiva. When Rebbe gets shailas, how does Rebbe decide which ones it's proper to paskin independently on and when Rebbe's going to discuss with others?
It's hard to say as a general principle. Everything has its own variables. And as you develop, you try to have a sense for what you really feel you have a grasp on all of the components of. Every shaila has elements of the reality and elements of the sources and elements of judgment. And sometimes you feel you have a strong grasp on one, a strong grasp on the other. And sometimes you may feel like there's a part where you really can sense that you could use the voice of somebody more experienced. I don't know if I can tell you as a general principle where it's going to come up more or the other, but it is just true overall that trying to give effective guidance in this area really requires knowing what the sources say, understand what they are coming to try to tell us as a cohesive message, and understanding how it applies to the situation in front of you and the individual in front of you. So sometimes you may feel like you have somewhat of a grasp on all those parts together, and very often it's helpful to bring in other perspectives so that you can have as complete a picture as possible.
Mm-hmm. And so we already mentioned the some of the Sfarim Rebbe's written and the Shirim, and anyone who's ever been on Why Torah knows Rebbe, or who's gotten different publications knows Rebbe. Rebbe's also not only put out his own stuff, but also basically every publication with Why Yulva on it also says edited by Rabbi Daniel Z. Feldman. How did Rebbe get into editing, and what does it take to be an editor of such a wide variety of publications and topics?
Well, that's a good question. So in the yeshiva, we have tremendous resources. As you know, we have certainly a tremendous powerhouse of Torah as far as our faculty. And so I focus on the Reitz faculty in terms of the Sfarim that we work on. And a few years ago, it just became clear that we had the resources to publish, and we certainly had the Torah coming from our fantastic faculty, but it wasn't necessarily cohesively coming together so much. So at the time, Rabbi Reitz Shlita was the Dean of Reitz. Since then, Rabbi Penner Shlita has been the Dean of Reitz, and both of them have been extremely supportive and involved with the idea that the yeshiva should have a organized approach towards bringing out the Sfarim of our Rebbeim, both in English and in Hebrew, in targeted ways, both trying to figure out what will be most effective in providing for our audiences, and also with the goal of trying to bring to light the Torah that our Rebbeim want to write about and to facilitate those kinds of publications. So it really came about through that. And these past 14, 15 years or so, I've been trying to work on doing as much as possible of helping to bring those publications to light. Sometimes involves more editorial work, sometimes involves less. Over the years, I've been blessed to have a lot of others involved on staff also. And thank God there's been a lot that we've been able to put on the shelves, and hopefully a lot more in the future.
I mean, and I think for us in the room, it's unanimous that everyone should check out the Bina B'Svarim series. Other than those, are there two or three Svarim from those that Rebbe's edited that Rebbe thinks, either despite the fact that they've already gotten so much attention, should get more, or some that have been overlooked that Rebbe maybe wants to shout out for the listeners to check out?
I'm going to have to shout out all of our Reitz Svarim. I think, thank God, we have a lot of, I'm not just going to focus on what's current. You know, we have the the Bata Yosef series, the Torah of Soloveitchik, and the Sock of Our Contemporary Rebbeim, which is a very exciting ongoing series. It's sponsored by the Karasik family. And that we've already released two volumes on Tishrei and Chanukah Purim. And that's been a tremendous experience. That's a very major long-term project. And we have many other volumes, some of which have been out already over the past few years, many of which are coming out over the next year. And I think they're all exciting. Good. Keep your eye out for the Reitz Press Farim. They should hopefully find the place on your shelves.
Okay. Whenever someone's listening to this, I guess, check out what's already out and look out for the new stuff. In addition to the traditional Sfarim Rebbe's put out and the Shiurim Rebbe's given and the lectures and panels and everything else, Rebbe's also, probably more than almost any other guest to be on this podcast, also done a tremendous amount of dissemination of Torah through podcasts. Rebbe, how does Rebbe decide what to branch out into and when to do it? And how does Rebbe go about teaching Torah on all these different platforms?
Well, I didn't realize that was true about the podcast. I wouldn't have known that that would be the case. I think
Rebbe's done Desert Island, I think, 1840. There's been an interview with the...
Yeah, so whoever calls, you know, try to... But I didn't orchestrate those. Thank God there have been a proliferation of wonderful venues for Torah. The podcast world, as you see, as you are partaking in, has been a tremendous driver of Torah study and of illuminating the world. And those that have seen fit to include me on their productions, I'm very grateful for the opportunity. And we have to try to spread Torah wherever we can. It's a complicated world, and there are all kinds of new venues that exist that allow communication and reaching people, both just in terms of quality and quantity, just in terms of reaching numbers of people that were not able to be reached before, and also people who, as individuals, couldn't have necessarily or wouldn't necessarily have been reached before. So if that possibility exists, then we're probably supposed to try to make use of it to the extent that we can. So I don't know that I'm necessarily so active, and I think there are many people who are doing much more in that area, but to whatever extent it's possible, it's a tremendous era that we're living in, that is happening, and that there's so many different ways to connect with people around the world and to allow them to find these points of tangency is really very exhilarating.
Wow. And we've mentioned so much of what Rebbe's done, and my guess is that most of the listeners who know Rebbe already know that it's not crazy to receive a text from Rebbe responding to a shiloh at 3 a.m. or later. Right now in Rebbe's time, it's 2:30 a.m. How does Rebbe schedule and maximize the day and accomplish so much?
If I was better scheduled, it wouldn't be so late today. I think it's quite the opposite. I'm just behind and I'm trying to catch up. So, hopefully I'll get back on track some point, and then it won't be so late today.
Okay. And wow. Well, we'll wrap up with a
few. Tell my mother.
Okay. We'll wrap up with a few more questions. We mentioned the Bina B'Sfarim a few times. I looked today at Rebbe's newest one on Dinei D'Rabbanan, and in addition to the numerous haskamas and the content itself, when one looks at the footnotes, already on page 3, there's a Kiyus Yaakov quoted that's now written by the Stipler, and when I made it to when I closed the sefer at I think it was page Kuf Dalet, I already saw a sefer that Amnei Shalom quoted, which I've never even seen a sefer called Amnei Shalom. How does Rebbe find and learn all these different Sfarim? Is this something that Rebbe has a Sfarim store guy who just calls Rebbe and he's like the dealer in a sense of Sfarim, or is Rebbe just browsing the shelves? How does Rebbe come across all this?
We have, thank God, we have libraries, we have and we have now with Hebrew books and Otzer HaChachma Sfarim are available everywhere, so you could, but the library's always been around, and many well-stocked shelves all over the place. Thank God my house is not lacking in environment to look at. And if you tend to get easily distracted, then you can find things in different places that will catch your attention. And then if you take note of them and you come back and you're holding in the sugya, then you'll have what to look at and what to quote from. But also one thing leads to another. And it goes back to the point that you asked about earlier, that to whatever extent it's possible to incorporate all the voices of the Talmid Chachamim over the course of generations. And I think there's definitely a goal to try to do that, because there's so many wonderful, great Torah scholars who had so much to say, and not everybody's going to be able to see all of what they've written. So if I can have some small role in helping them get their word out, then that's a tremendous chus, I think.
Wow, very nice. And I already referred a few times to the skamas Rebbe has in Bina Besfarim, and I assume those are cherished items, the skama from Rav Ovadia and others. But Rebbe also has some, less Torah-related possessions that I've heard about that also might have a nice place in Rebbe's heart, a Neil Armstrong autograph or a Ronald Reagan signed portrait. When it comes to different gifts Rebbe's received over the years from family members or friends, what sticks out to Rebbe?
So it's a big difference between those. Neil Armstrong is just from a phase when I was collecting autographs and I was writing to people pretty randomly. But Ronald Reagan, that was more significant. That was my aunt, Alaa Shalom, who passed away a little more than a year ago. And I wrote an article about her that got some significant circulation. I'm just mentioning that because she deserves the mention, that she was a correspondent in the White House for many decades, and she interviewed presidents from Kennedy up to the second George Bush, and she had a special knack for developing a relationship with them. And when I was 9 years old, so I had an injury at a birthday party, and I made a joke about it, that Ronald Reagan had been shot not long before that, and he had said, "Honey, I forgot to duck." And so I made some comment about trying to be like Reagan, something along those lines. So my father's Chama Bracha mentioned that to his sister. And then the next week I had this letter in my mailbox with a big picture that was autographed by the president. And it said, "Dear Daniel, I hear you too forgot to duck. I hope you're feeling better soon." So, that was, that just said something about him. It said something about my aunt, so that's, that is something that was significant. And, there are things like that that are fascinating and that give you a little window into different areas of life and different personalities, and that are part of the things that we hold on to.
Well, okay. And, if it's okay, we'll ask two more quick questions. One is that I've personally never been in Rebbe's sukkah, but I have family members and friends who have. And when I mentioned that I was doing this episode, one of the things they mentioned is that not only Rebbe has great artwork on the walls of the sukkah, but Rebbe actually made it all himself. What exactly got Rebbe into art, and how much time does Rebbe give to it?
Very little, so I can't say that it's so great, but when I was younger, I used to draw more, and that is something I haven't had much time for in recent years, although it seems to have been taken up by my children, and some of them have been, some of my daughters specifically, have really produced some beautiful artwork, and so I look forward to seeing what their future sukkahs will look like, and so I'm gratified that Dave picked up the pencil, the paintbrush. But I have not spent much time on it at all in the past decades. I like doodling still from time to time.
Rebbe makes the covers for the YU Sfarim?
No, I used to make covers for the NCSY yearbooks and the high school yearbooks, things like that. That was a long time ago.
Okay. And now we'll wrap up with the final question, which is the last question for every episode. And that is that we mentioned Rebbe's done so many podcasts, and Rebbe's done so much of the community and with YU receiving questions from not only so many different areas, but so many different types of people and types of questions. But despite the fact that Rebbe's been asked so many questions, there's always questions people are never asked that they wish they were. So reflecting on everything Rebbe has been asked, what's a question Rebbe never has been asked that he wished he was, and what answer would Rebbe give?
That's a great question. I wish somebody had asked me this question before so I could prepare for it. I think they say that it was Rav Shlomo Zalman. I think Rav Schechter relates to him, Rav Shlomo Zalman, that he used to, who was Rav Moshe, I should remember this better, that he felt bad that around the time of Yom Kippur, people weren't asking more questions about how to do tshuva.
Rav Shlomo Zalman, right?
Rav Shlomo Zalman.
In the footnote, right?
Yeah. So, having mentioned before that the area of Ben Adam L'Chavero is a focus, so having people focus on these questions is important. But I think, to be honest, there is a lot of focus on those questions, so I'm happy to see those things discussed. I wouldn't say that they're not discussed, but it could always be discussed more. And how can we develop a greater sense of mutual respect and understanding, and how can that impact on our culture and our mitzvos in general in that realm is a project I hope that we can all try to work towards. And everyone who's expressing interest in that, I think, is making a great contribution.
No way. Thank you, Rebbe. Everyone should look into that, look into the svarim, look into the shul, and everything else. Is there anything Rebbe wants to mention before we end the episode?
I want to mention how much of a pleasure it's been speaking to you.
All right. Thank you.
I want you to keep up the wonderful work. And thank you so much for taking time to speak to me.
Thank you.
For everything that you do. And it's great to be here with you at Mar Shakol. And we should look forward to many more wonderful things.
Okay. Thank you, Rebbe.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this past episode of the Jewish Schmooze podcast. To get our latest updates and contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Jews_Schmooze. If you want to sponsor an upcoming episode, you can reach out to JewsSchmoozeMarketing@gmail.com. And if you give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening on, that would be tremendously appreciated. Thank you so much, and hope you're looking forward to the next episode also.